On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
This is one of those interviews that excites me a lot, but I must admit to a little intrepidation too, because my wife is the mathematician in our family, not me. And when I told her that I was interviewing Dr. Jason Lyle about his new book, Fractals, The Secret Code of Creation, and then from New Leaf Publishing, Master Books, and that it had to do with math, which she recognized, of course, because she said, "Fractals? Really?" And I said, "Yes." She got all excited. And I said, "I'll be talking to him." And she said, "Well, this is one you should have let me do." And that's quite possible, Jason, but I'll do my best. Dr. Jason Lyle is a Christian astrophysicist who writes and speaks on various topics relating to science and the defense of the Christian faith. He works in full-time apologetics ministry, specializing in biblical science. His most well-known book, The Ultimate Proof of Creation, demonstrates that biblical creation is the only logical possibility for origins. His newest book, Fractals, The Secret Code of Creation, elaborates on that theme and shows even more proof about the only logical conclusion that only Christianity makes sense with the science. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So the first question that needs to be asked is, I've had the benefit of reading your book, so now I kind of understand what fractals are, but I'm imagining there are a fair number of people that are listening to us that are scratching their heads right now. So can you explain to non-mathematicians, what exactly is a fractal?
Well, a fractal is any shape that when you zoom in on it and look at a small section of it, you'll find that this small section resembles the entire shape. And there are things in nature that are like that. Certain ferns, for example, when you look at the entire fern and then you zoom in on one of the leaflets of it, it looks like the entire fern, like a smaller version of the original. And the particular type of fractals that I'm examining in the book are primarily a type that occurred when you plot certain mathematical equations, very simple equations, and the plot that you make, the map of which points belong to a set, turns out to be fractal. And that was a surprise to everyone. It was something that was discovered in 1978 at the earliest, and really not until the 1980s that people start exploring this particular shape. And the set in particular that I explore for most of the book is called the Mandelbrot set. And so it's what we're looking at is a map of which points belong to this set, where when you plot them, it'll make a shape, and that shape happens to be fractal.
Now, what makes this very, very interesting, and what makes it significant to us as Christians, is that math is not something that human beings invented or created. Math, as you say, is simply a way of accounting for numbers. Math is simply a way of accounting for the number of things that we have with which to deal. Right, it's not something that we really invent. It's something we discovered is inherent in nature.
Right, I would say mathematics is the study of the relationship between numbers. And some people think, well, numbers are physical things. Well, no, they're not, because although you can have three bananas, you can't have just threeness. that's an abstract concept. You can't touch threeness or pull threeness out of the refrigerator. And so it turns out that although math is very useful when we apply it to physical things, architects, when they build buildings, they use mathematics, but mathematics itself is conceptual. It exists in the mind, and the mathematical truths that we discover occur in the mind because they involve numbers, and numbers are a concept of quantity. And I would further argue as a Christian that the mind of God is responsible for mathematical truths, because numbers are God's creation in the sense that he is responsible for them, and his mind determines mathematical truths. We discover those mathematical truths. It's not like we could, by the force of our will, make 2 plus 2 equal anything other than 4, because you see in God's mind 2 plus 2 equals 4, and therefore if we're going to think God's thoughts after him, if we're going to think properly, we must accept that 2 plus 2 equals 4. And mathematicians throughout the centuries have discovered new mathematical truths. We don't create them, we discover them. And I'll grant that we create the notation. That's fine. And you can use different notations. You can use Roman numerals, or you can use Arabic numerals and what have you. But in terms of the relationship between numbers, that's something that's set by God. We have no control over it.
Now, in here you say that mathematicians began analyzing solutions in a branch of math that's called complex dynamics. That's what you're talking about, the sets of numbers that are defined by functions that involve iteration, that doing a calculation repeatedly. And when you assign colors to this, and this is where the doing this on the radio is the only slightly disappointing thing about this, is I can't hold this incredibly beautiful book up to the microphone and let everybody see just how beautiful these iterations are, and how incredible all of this looks. And this is if we assign colors to certain points in the equation, that this is what it looks like, right?
Yes, this involves a branch of mathematics. Well, actually, chaotic mathematics, chaos. People have heard of that. And when mathematicians refer to chaos, they don't just mean the clutter in your house or something like that. They're referring to a specific mathematical situation where a very small change in your initial condition results in a huge change in the outcome. And they found that this tends to happen when you study what are called recursive algorithms. And that's just a fancy way of saying you're doing something over and over again. So you take a number and you plug it through a formula. Then the formula could be as simple as plus one. Okay, so you have one. Now you start with number one and you add plus one, you get two. Now you put that back into the formula, two plus one, three. You put it back in, three plus one, four, and so on, five, six, seven, eight, nine. And you get a sequence of numbers. Now, mathematicians found that there are certain algorithms that when you put a number in, like one, and you run it through many times, you might end up with 10, something like that. On the other hand, if you put a very slightly different number in, like 1.00001, and you put it in and run it through a million times, instead of getting 10, you'll get 100 billion. You'll get a totally different answer. And that was very surprising to them, that you could make this very small change in your starting number and end up with a huge change in the outcome. And it was hard to study because, when you do these algorithms, you have to plug the number in many, many, many times, and that's tedious. And so it wasn't really until the 1980s that computers were fast enough where they could do these calculations very quickly. And so that allowed mathematicians to analyze which numbers belong to a particular set. And the way they define belonging to a set is that when you run the number through that little algorithm, you plug it in and you get a new number out, and you plug the new number in, you get a new number, and so on. You do that forever. And one of two things will happen. Either the sequence that you get of resulting numbers will get bigger and bigger and bigger without end, or it won't. It might get smaller, or it might oscillate between 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, and do that forever. In any case, it doesn't get big. And so if the number stays small, then the number we're checking does belong to the set that we're investigating. And if it doesn't belong, then that means the sequence gets really big really fast. And the particular equation that they were studying is very simple. It's z squared plus c. Very simple. So c is the point that you're checking to see if it belongs to what's called the Mandelbrot set. And z is another point that initially starts at zero. And when you run it through the formula, you'll find that either z gets really big or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then c, the number you're checking, does belong to the Mandelbrot set. And I know that it sounds complicated when you say it that way, but when you read the book, it's really very basic. Anybody who has had even junior high school level of mathematics can read the book and understand it. You don't have to have any kind of advanced knowledge of math. You just have to know how to add or multiply numbers. Very right. Simple. And then the computer's doing the rest of the work for you. The computer checks a bunch of points and makes a map of which points belong. And the map is incredibly interesting and beautiful.
Yes. In fact, it's the map that makes this astounding. For example, one of the maps that you have, and in case you're just joining us, by the way, we're talking to Jason Lyle, who is the author of Fractals, The Secret Code of Creation from Master Books, which is a division of the New Leaf Publishing Group. There is a series in the Mandelbrot set that is tiny seahorses, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. And even if you stretch it out and can look at the tinier parts of it, it goes on indefinitely, or as you say, it goes on to infinity with tinier and tinier seahorses. And that's not just using your imagination. It's like you look up in the stars at night and say, well, it kind of reminds me of this. No, these really look like seahorses. And there's another set of them that look like elephants.
Yes. And these were, this set was explored by an IBM computer programmer named Benoit Mandelbrot. That's where the set gets its name. Yeah, the overall shape, when you make a map of the whole thing, it has kind of a weird, it's kind of a heart structure with circles attached to it. And then Mandelbrot and others found that when you zoom in, especially on the cusps where one circle intersects another or where a circle intersects the cardioid, you'll find these incredibly beautiful shapes. And it seems like the more you zoom in, the prettier they get. And one section, sure enough, it looks like seahorses, a sequence of seahorses with these incredibly spiral tail and kind of a spiderweb structure for the head. It's gorgeous. And then on opposite of that, you find these double spirals that look kind of like spiral galaxies. Stunningly beautiful. And Mandelbrot found that if you assigned a color to a particular value of Z, it's even prettier. You can get these incredibly beautiful shapes. And so that was the amazing thing. It wasn't so much about the fact that, you know, you can plug a number in and very quickly check to see if it belongs to the set, but rather the map of the set turns out to be incredibly interesting, beautiful, and fractal. It turns out when you zoom in on certain sections of the set, you see the entire set, like a baby version of the entire set. And you can zoom in on a small section of it, and you get a baby version of the baby version, and so on. And you can do that forever. You can zoom in on this thing forever. It's infinitely complex. And of course, that makes sense in the Christian worldview, because when we examine mathematics, we're really examining the way God thinks about numbers, and God's mind is infinite. And so it gives you a little bit of a taste of the mind of God and how beautiful that mind is. And so I would just emphasize that when people pick up this book, they're going to see these wonderful, beautiful pictures. I have to emphasize that no human being created those pictures. Those pictures were created by God.
It really is extraordinary. When I first picked up the book, I really kind of expected it to be a lot of very technical stuff. And I was thinking, well, I'm going to have Becky explain all this to me. But instead, the book is just loaded with gorgeous pictures. And when you start to read the text that goes along with them, you realize what's going on here, that these are not some kind of computer creation. These are if you assign colors to these different points, this is what it's going to look like. And the fact that no matter how teeny-weeny it gets more complicated, which indicates that the mind that created this has to be incredibly complicated and basically infinite. Then it starts to have a real theological feel to it, that this is not just randomness here. No, nothing random could have made this happen. You describe the different shapes that can be put together here and so forth. And once again, we're at a disadvantage because you can't see the pictures as we're talking about it. But I'm thinking that probably there is a website somewhere where you can go and see some of these pictures that are displayed here that are just magnificent. The first time you saw this, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was amazing. I first read about these. I was in high school, and I read a book by Roger Penrose, the mathematician, called The Emperor's New Mind, where he was exploring the nature of consciousness. Anyway, one of the chapters was on fractals, and in particular, the Mandelbrot set. And I thought, well, that's fascinating that you can get these amazing shapes. And I wrote a little computer program to generate my own, to explore this universe that that has just been discovered. And of course, back then, you know, we didn't have the internet and stuff like that. If you wanted a program to do something, you had to write it. But it's not hard. It's not hard to do because the math is so simple. It's just, you know, squaring a number and adding it to another number. And in fact, the first chapter in the book is really the only thing that goes into any kind of mathematics at all. It's very basic. The rest of the book is about exploring the shape, exploring the different beauty of it, and then exploring the theological or philosophical implications of the shape. But when I first learned about these, I thought, man, this is amazing. And I shared it with my friends, and they thought it was amazing. And then once I realized the theological implications, that only the biblical God can make sense of these shapes, I realized that this is something that the world needs to know about this. It's kind of like discovering a new universe that's incredibly beautiful. I mean, we have access to the physical universe with things like the Hubble Space Telescope. You see these beautiful pictures, and it certainly reflects God's glory. This is like another universe that we didn't even know existed until 1980s. And I just wanted to share that, the beauty of that universe, with people and give God the glory for it, because it's his universe. Just as the physical universe is his, so the universe of mathematics is his. And it, unlike the physical universe, where you maybe would need access to a powerful telescope to explore the most distant galaxies and so on, this is a shape that anyone can explore if you have even a very modest computer or access to one. And most people do these days. And so I've included in the book, I've also included a program that will allow you to explore these shapes and zoom in on them and just, explore this universe that you didn't even know existed until, no one knew existed until the 1980s.
There is a significant section of the book, about half of the book, where you talk about why this points the way toward God. And that's where I started to really click with it. Because then I was on more familiar territory, and you talk about examining what can account for these beautiful things that are there that nobody made, that just exist and are infinitely complex and infinitely repeating. So if that's the case, the mind has to be the kind of mind that is capable of creating that, which is not a human mind. And
yes.
and the beauty exists in just about all the sets that you explored. And no matter what color we choose to assign to the fractal, we're borrowing the colors from God anyway. I love that. I'm quoting Jason here. So while people are responsible for the selection of colors assigned to a fractal, he writes, this does not create nor account for the beauty of a fractal. It can only elucidate what is already there. And you can't say, it's the computer that's doing this, because computers don't create. They are
right. They
are magnificent in computing. That's kind of their gig. But they don't make, they don't generate things from nothing, unlike God.
That's right. And in fact, you could discover this whole set manually. You could manually run through that formula, do it on your calculator or with your fingers or whatever. It would just take an incredibly long time. What the computer does is it allows you to explore the shape very quickly. But it doesn't create it, because the computer's just following the rules of mathematics. And the map that results is built into the numbers and the rules of mathematics between them. And so just like a microscope doesn't create bacteria, it allows you to see them and explore them. Likewise, the computer doesn't create fractals, but it allows you to see these incredible shapes that are already built into laws of mathematics, laws of numbers. And since numbers are conceptual, it has to be a mind that's responsible for them. And therefore, I would argue that it has to be the mind of God, because these are infinite. You can zoom in on these things forever. And you can even find on the Internet, if you want to do a deep zoom into the Mandelbrot set, there are computer programs that have zoomed in factors of, like a Google or something, that, and it just keeps going. And it seems like the more you zoom in, the prettier it gets. And that's something, too, that human beings, we can't do that. Machines that we make, when you zoom in, they get simpler until you get down to the level where we can't really organize it that well. But no, these shapes get more complex and beautiful the more you zoom in. It's amazing.
In the section on fractals and the Christian worldview, Jason writes, now we see very clearly the secularist dilemma. Laws of mathematics are conceptual. Like all concepts, they exist only in the mind. Yet laws of mathematics existed before the human mind. The atheist assumes the human mind evolved over time, and that in the distant past there were no minds in the universe. Yet he also assumes that the universe obeyed mathematical laws at that time. Being conceptual, mathematical laws require a mind. So the atheistic worldview is inherently contradictory. And you talk about other worldviews too. Hinduism, for example, that the idea that Hinduism is monistic, which does not accept, is one that does not accept distinctions. All are one.
Right.
In fact, the whole idea of going to nirvana is that you become a drop in the great ocean of whatever is over on the other side of death, which is not really very appealing. I like the idea, if we're going to have a life after death, that we are individuals at least as savvy as we are on this side of the grave. What good is it to be a single drop in the great pond of humanity and therefore indistinguishable from anyone else? I don't get the point of that. There's an illustration in here of the inside of the chambered nautilus. And this is a fractal in the plant or in the physical world, an animal. There is a word that I heard tossed about a couple of years ago called Fibonacci.
Yeah.
The idea that things can recur and get tinier and tinier and tinier, and we have not been able to decide, in the case of, say, the chambered nautilus, we have not been able to figure out how infinitely small it can go, but we know as it goes that it stays in perfect relationship to itself, and it just the space between it gets smaller and smaller, right?
Yes, yeah. The Fibonacci sequence, it's something that pops out in mathematics from time to time. It's basically a sequence where you take, where the next number is the sum of the previous two. So 1 plus 1 is 2, 2 plus 1 is 3, 3 plus 2 is 5, 5 plus 3, 8, and so on. That sequence, it turns out that sequence is surprisingly common in nature. Sunflowers, for example, if you examine the numbers in the rows that they have, you'll find the Fibonacci sequence. And lo and behold, the Fibonacci sequence is part of the Mandelbrot set. If you take a look at the there are these sort of circles that grow off the perimeter, and growing off of them are these beautiful little dendrites, these little stems. And if you look at the number of stems that grows off of each one, and you follow it, and you go in between the two circles, you'll find that it adds the number of dendrites between those two circles. And if you go in between the next two and so on, you get the Fibonacci sequence. So the Mandelbrot set does have the Fibonacci sequence built into it. And there are also certain numbers that if you plot them, if you plot the Fibonacci sequence in the right way, it will form a spiral, very much like a chambered nautilus. So there is a connection between the Fibonacci sequence and these beautiful spirals that we see.
You quote Johann Kepler in here as saying, to do math is to think God's thoughts after him. It's been a long time since I've heard about Johann Kepler. His calculations were important in astrophysics, right? In the world outside Earth, but considered one of the most brilliant minds of human history.
Oh, he was brilliant. He discovered the three laws of planetary motion, and we take those for granted today. But he discovered them back before telescopes had been invented. At least the first two he discovered before telescopes had been invented. Pretty amazing. And the way he discovered it, he looked at data taken by Tycho Brahe. And it's a list of numbers, and from that list of numbers of positions of, especially Mars, he was able to figure out the way the planets move. And I can't emphasize how brilliant the mind is to do that, because you see, when we look at Mars, we're on a moving planet looking at another moving planet. And so you have to solve two problems at the same time. You have to solve Earth's motion and Mars's motion simultaneously to figure out where Mars should look from our perspective on Earth. Now, that takes a mind to be able to do that. He was brilliant, and he was also a very devout Christian, biblical creationist, even calculated the age of the Earth. It's somewhere around 6,000 years, so we would agree on that. His number might be a little different from what we would use today, but he had tremendous respect for the Bible as the Word of God. And, in fact, he was actually originally training to be a minister, and then he realized that God's beauty is revealed in mathematics as well. And so he gave glory to God for the discoveries that he made. And he's certainly a brilliant mind. He's somebody I really look up to. He's one of my heroes of the faith.
We forget that in the beginning of science, that practically all of the great scientists were very devout Christians, not just deists, not just people that gave lip service, but truly believed that God was the brilliant mind that created everything. And to try to understand God, we could try to understand the orderness of the universe, but the very fact that there isn't mere chaos, but there is an order to the universe, indicates an orderly mind, and that mind is God's. I was impressed by the fact that you used Kepler and other great Christian scientists throughout your book. Here we have this amazing thing discovered by a mathematician who did not create it, but just found it, and he was surprised. Which, that says something, too. That if he had expected it, it'd be one thing. But he was not expecting it. And so this gives us quite an insight into the infinite mind of God, which is more than a little awesome and more than a little amazing.
Yes, indeed. That's really the main theme of the book, is that there's this universe that exists that you probably didn't know about. Nobody knew about it until about 40 years ago. And it's infinite, it's complex, it's incredibly beautiful. And it's something that only the Christian worldview can make sense of. In fact, when the Mandelbrot set was first discovered, and we were starting to see some of the beauty of this, it was argued. Some people said, well, no, maybe that's just an artifact of the computer. It's something, you know, due to it being coded improperly. We now know that's false. Mathematicians have now proved that the main sections of the Mandelbrot are real. And computers are far more powerful now, so we can do more precise calculations. You still get the same shapes. So it's no doubt that these shapes, these incredibly beautiful structures, are built into the conceptual world of mathematics, and only recently revealed thanks to the power of computers to be able to run these calculations very, very quickly. but it's something that I would argue only makes sense in the Christian worldview. And I do discuss other worldviews and their attempts to mm-hmm. explain these, but I don't think there are any. I think it's only the Christian worldview that can do that. So I think this book will be challenging to folks who are not Christians. I'm hoping they'll be challenged and recognize the truth of the Christian worldview and receive Christ as Savior. That's my prayer. And by the way, the book does have the gospel message in it at the end. And so it's a book that I'm hoping that if you're a Christian, you might get it, read it yourself. It's beautiful. Put it on your coffee table. You know, make a nice conversation starter. Give it to your friend, or at least let them borrow it, or give them a copy for Christmas. You never know. God might use that as part of the means to save people, and that's my prayer.
You are the founder of the Biblical Science Institute, your full-time apologetics ministry website, so people can find out more about your work or more about the Biblical Science Institute?
Yeah, it's just biblicalscienceinstitute.com.
Excellent. I like simple stuff like that. BiblicalScienceInstitute.com.
People can get the book at the website, and the website also has a lot of other resources there, all kinds of free online articles that I would encourage people to check out.
Very good. I'm going to do that myself. Jason Lyle, a Christian astrophysicist who writes and speaks on various topics related to science and defense of the Christian faith, a graduate of Ohio Wesleyan University and the University of Colorado in Boulder, where he earned his PhD in astrophysics. And he is the founder of the Biblical Science Institute and the author of this incredible book, Fractals, The Secret Code of Creation, from Master Books. The secret code embedded in math itself. And for all of us out there that don't think of ourselves as particularly being mathematically aligned enough to make sense of it, don't worry. As Jason has said, you don't have to know calculus to be able to figure out what these fractals are all about, and what they indicate is the most significant thing, which is that they originate in the mind of God. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our thanks again to Dr. Jason Lyle, the founder of the Biblical Science Institute. Their website, cleverly enough, is BiblicalScienceInstitute.com. You'll find all kinds of things there, including information about his newest book, Fractals, The Secret Code of Creation, from Master Books, a division of New Leaf Publishing Group. You can check their website too, masterbooks.com. We'll see you next time on your favorite radio station, and hopefully you check out my podcast so you can hear some of these interviews as well. That is onthebookshelf.podbean.com. Till next time, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks so much for joining us, and God bless.